Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and the 12 steps. Produced, hosted, and posted by people in recovery who've been given strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show. Hey, what's up? This is Christian with the Most High Show, and we're talking to Suleiman Hassan from Philadelphia, born and raised. And you might have seen him on Instagram. His handle is Soldiers for Recovery, and he does these amazing motivational videos. That's how we saw him. And just like, if you are feeling like today is not a good day for recovery for you, you need to follow his Instagram and be motivated, because I love the energy. So, man, thank you so much for joining us here virtually.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. So what I'd like to do today is kind of, get a little bit about your story, where your addiction led you and where recovery has led you. And then we got some topics, too, we might try and dive into. So why don't you tell me a little bit about where you are now, what it is that you do for a living, and kind of what do you do now today?
Okay, what I do now, hello, everyone. First and foremost, thanks for having me, man. Thanks for having me. My life now is way better than what it was. I'm a barber, so I've been cutting hair now for about 18 years. I'm a manager of a whole barbershop of a staff about 12, and which is unbelievable because I couldn't see myself here, 6 years ago. I got a small family. Me and my wife, been together 18 years. Just bought a house. Got a salon. My wife does hair, and I got myself together. I was able to help her with that. I have two lovely daughters and one son. My oldest daughter is 20. She starts college tomorrow. My youngest is 16, and my son is 20. And, life is good today. Life is very good today.
That's awesome. Yeah, we see a lot of your videos are in the construction world, so I thought maybe you was out there slinging a hammer, too.
No, that's just a metaphor.
Okay.
I use that as an example. And if you guys would go to my page and view my page, you'll see different backgrounds and different settings.
Okay.
Because each setting connects to the message that I'm delivering.
Nice.
For that day.
All right. Cool. So you have this beautiful family, beautiful wife who's been with you through it all. And so I can relate to that. That's how my wife has been in my life, and also we just sent our oldest daughter to college, so it's a trip. Yeah, and I kept saying to people, I never planned to be this sober or this old. So I'm learning a lot of new things now that in sobriety that are beautiful. But for you, that wasn't always the case. So you want to tell me when was the first time that you knew that you were addicted, that you had a substance or alcohol problem?
Okay. My wife used to tell me, I met my wife when I was 21, and I was drinking, off and on, heavy sometimes, sporadically. And then as I got closer to 25 is when it got worse. I wouldn't come home for a whole week. And I was in denial from 21 to 25. But 25 is when I realized I had a problem, because I had some self-reflecting, some weeks I don't even come home, or once I take one, that's it, it's off to the races. So I was about 25 when I acknowledged it and started, going to meetings.
Yeah. So you knew something. Now, did that catch on right away, or how long did you battle with that before you made the decision to move forward in your life sober?
Well, actually, no. I didn't stop. You know, the drinking got worse. You know, that was just the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. You know, I didn't completely stop until about 10 to 12 years later.
Yeah.
You know, but that was the beginning of acknowledgement for me. You know, and that's what I tell people all the time. You have to acknowledge it first. And then the war starts, you know, because after that, it was several more, you know, blackouts, several more fights, you know, more losses, man, in my life, man. It's you know, it brings tears to my eyes, man.
Yeah.
You know, the journey and being homeless, you know, I had my family homeless, man, about 3 times on my alcohol addiction.
Yeah.
DUIs, you know, I can go on and on.
Yeah.
But that was the beginning of the fight when I was 25.
Right. Yeah, and that's what happens to those of us who are addicted. I mean, we do. We lose things. And we have we cause a lot of pain and a lot of damage.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think speaks to why today a lot of us, you included, you know, are so vigilant about telling that story, getting it out there, because, you know, if we can save one other person from going down to the depth of depravity that we went, then it makes our pain at least worth it, in a sense. At least that's how I see it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's why we're here talking right now, really. To tell that story and to share that story, to empower others that they don't have to go down that same path. Do you remember, like, when you were first introduced to alcohol? Do you remember, like, it being, you know, some people say it was, like, the best thing that ever happened to them, or how were you introduced to it?
I was introduced to alcohol from just being in my neighborhood. I was about 14 years old, and just hanging out, you know what I mean, going to school, drinking in school, sneaking out at lunchtime, drinking outside of school.
Yeah.
So I was about 14, and it was a lot of fun when it first started. I can't lie about that.
Right, right.
It was fun, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing, man, you know, and there's been a lot of studies around the social aspects of alcoholism and addiction. And, you know, some of those studies found that what's happening is there's a social need, a need for us to be accepted into a group. You know, it's like a tribe. You know, I think humans and our bases are tribalistic. We like our tribe. And for some of us alcoholics and addicts, we never fit in, and we have a hard time fitting in. And what happens is we get to this group of people, and it's not about the drinking or the drugs, but it's about the crew, you know.
Right.
At least that's how it was for me. Like, I had a crew, and we were out tagging the streets, and that was like we were bonded together. And that was the real thing I wanted. That was the craving I had, right?
Right.
But the alcohol and the drugs were just a part of that until it became everything, you know. So that's really that's something that I think also too, when once we get into recovery, to have that community, why it's so important, because it's really what it is. We want to feel like we belong somewhere, right?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
We're accepted. We were talking a little bit earlier, and you mentioned that you had to go somewhere. You had to go to rehab to make the shift. Can you tell me a little bit about what led up to you making that decision, and then what that was like?
Well, what led up to that was, you know, I got tired, you know. It's a saying that they say, you know, you got to be tired of being sick and tired, and then tired of being sick and tired, and tired and tired again. And that's what simply what had happened to me. I got tired of the self-destruction. I got tired of looking at my wife's face every morning and my family, you know, going through the pain. You know, I got tired of just in that rat race to get another drink or a drug just to feel normal, you know.
Yeah.
I got tired of just feeling worthless, you know. It was times, you know, I never thought about suicide, but you know, it got to the point that I felt comfortable with just being out in the street. You know, when I had a nice home, I got tired of that feeling, and I just knew that I wanted more for myself.
Yeah.
I knew that this can't be what life's about. I just wanted a change.
Yeah.
I just wanted a change, man. And it's like, when you know, I got tired of living in hell.
Yeah.
And, you know, addiction is like hell. I just got tired, and I just wanted a way out. I got tired of begging God to help me and not doing or taking the steps to help myself first.
Right.
Because, you know, God says, if you take one step to him, he's going to take 10 steps towards you.
Right.
And I never, you know, took that first step sincerely, you know.
Right.
And I just got tired. I can just remember just being in the fog. Every day was a dark cloud, the sun would be out. And I was just being so much internal pain, man.
Right.
Just the pain. I can't even explain it.
Yeah.
You know, and the emptiness, the soullessness and depression and anxiety and, you know, stuff I didn't even know I was going through or couldn't describe what's happening to me. And all that led me to going to the rehab.
Yeah. So when you did go into rehab, I guess you kind of had to make that decision and go into a place. How long were you in rehab for?
I went to detox first. Mind you, this was like my third or fourth time going into detox because I would get, you know, that 5 days and then leave.
Yeah.
This time I was in detox for 5 days and I was at the rehab for about 31 days. So altogether, I did about 36 days.
Hmm. Yeah. That was enough to reset you this time.
Yeah, it was enough to hold on to that feeling, I guess. Yeah.
Right.
You know, because I always say it's a bust. Like, a lot of people don't know this, but a whole lot of addicts can relate. Maybe you, during our time of, you know, of active addiction, I call it a spiritual bus. Pulls up and say, hey, you ready? And it's that feeling and that drive.
Right.
You know, that'll come only once in a while.
Yeah.
And most of us won't get on the bus.
Right.
You know, but I told myself months before I got with this time, you know, I made a commitment with myself, you know, and I said, if that bus come back around, I'm getting on that bus and I'm going to stay on it. So one day I woke up. Yeah. And that feeling was right there. I got dressed, you know. My wife asked me, you know, what's wrong? I said, I'm going to rehab. She's like, what's wrong? And she knew what was wrong. But I got on that bus, man, and I didn't look back.
Yeah. Now, I love the way you said that because that's kind of what happened to me. I did. I got on that bus. And, you know, I was ready. I was ready to do it. In some ways, I was too ready. I kept wanting to fix everything in my life.
Right.
And you know, it's taken a long time to where things are getting fixed, right? But I was ready. I was exactly like you're saying, man. I was sick and tired. I couldn't do it anymore. I wanted to be whole again, you know?
Yeah.
And so once I figured that out, you know, that I'm a spiritual being, you know, I'm a child of God, and I'm trying to live my life like I'm not, you know, like I'm not loved and I'm not cared for. And it's taken a long time to get to that, to let that sink in, you know, into my spirit and into my soul. But it's for me, that was the way it was too. It was like I once I got removed from all those influences and had that chance to get sober minded, you know, I jumped right on it. And, you know, of course, I've experienced cravings, and then especially early on, I really, you know, it was hard. And
It's very hard. I remember my first 2 weeks. I had went back to work, and not, you know, because I had stopped cutting hair. Me, you know, during my addiction, that's caused me to stop, you know, cutting hair for 2 years actually, but. I remember getting clean in like my first 2 weeks, and I got my check, and I wanted to use so bad that I sat down on the couch, man, and I cried like a baby.
Mm.
Because they say you pick up your phone, you call somebody. I called everybody. See, a lot of people don't know. You have to get through those moments. It's times that God's going to put you with, when it's just you and him.
Yeah.
It's just going to be you and God during the early parts of recovery where it's going to be nobody around. You know, you pick up your phone, call your sponsor, they're not going to pick up. You know, and I experienced that twice where I sat and cried.
Yeah.
And cried and fought against my desire, you know, that craving and everything. Yeah. And I played the tape. I used every tool that I learned in the rehab.
Yeah.
And that's why I encourage everybody, go to rehab, pay attention, learn mm-hmm. about this disease. They have the tools there.
Right.
No matter how messed up the place is, because I know it's a lot of places, they don't run good. You know,
right.
But guess what? If you're in there paying attention, you know, it's just like the teacher in school. The
right.
teacher's not going to pay attention to the kid that's over there acting up.
Right.
But if you're in there doing what you need to do, you will get the tools. And had I not paid attention when I went in that rehab, I wouldn't have made it through those moments.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's a good word, because I do know those times myself, you know, those times of like, it was just me and God, and you have to be that level. That's why when they say you got to do it for yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think, you know, that they're talking about that in those moments, there's something within you, right? And between you and God that you have to know, and you've made this decision and you've made this commitment, right? A buddy of mine told me about the word decide, right? And he said that, you know, it's two words, right? You know, do the root words and stuff. And it's got the side, C-I-D-E in it, right? And like, what other words have that side in it? And so he said, you know, suicide, right? Homicide, pesticide. All these things would deal with kind of death, right? The ending, the cutting off of something. And so he says that when you decide, what you're doing is you're cutting off every other option. You're killing every option, and all you are leaving open is the one decision you made, right? And I think that's a great word, breaking down that word, because when you decide that this is a life you're going to live, there is a part of it that is on you to make that decision, to make the next right decision, right?
That's right.
And you're right, like, you call people and people, even when people pick up, sometimes they don't say the right things. You know, you don't get the relief that you're looking for. And so it ultimately does come down to us and what we're going to do. And that's why, you know, having higher power, having God is, and having that relationship and that understanding is so key.
It's important. Like I tell people, man, whatever your spiritual belief is, you know, if you believe in the shoe, that's up to you. You gotta hold on to something.
Yeah.
Nothing has to be a power greater than yourself.
Yeah.
You know, to get through these moments. You know, and if you strongly believe that whatever it is, then, you know, I'm not here to judge anybody, but, you know, you're gonna need something.
Yeah.
You're gonna need something. So,
yeah.
You know, for the ones that are not spiritual, that's on them. I don't knock it. Okay, you're not spiritual, but you're going to have to believe in something, even if it's, you know, regardless of what it is.
Yeah.
You know, but it has to be something, because if it's just emptiness, nothing, you're sure to repeat the same behavior.
Yeah.
You know, because even in recovery, even in the structure of, you know, the big books and everything, it's rules that we have to, you know, abide by.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's certain places that we have to, you know, govern ourselves with as individuals.
Yeah.
And we have to abide by these rules to what? So that way we don't relapse.
Right.
You know, that way we don't go back in these, you know, kind of social gatherings, social areas, you know, that has nothing to do with religion. But if you don't have some kind of structure or something that you believe in that's going to work for you, you know, then you are doomed. You're not doomed to the end, but you are more percentage wise. Let's say 80%. You're gonna relapse.
Right, because if you don't have a structure, see, that's the thing, is that if you everyone has it. They have some sort of framework in which they are interpreting reality with, right? And so if you don't acknowledge what that framework is, then you're doomed to repeat these things over and over again because you don't understand it. And so I totally agree. Like having some sort of framework, you know, whatever it is, that can help you to interpret reality is so key. And I think that's when religion, that's when the 12-step communities are at their best, is when they give us those things and those handles to hold on to.
Right.
One of the things that, like, I really like this concept of self-love and self-acceptance. And so, you know, this was about 5 years ago when you went into this rehab. So you've been living a life committed to sobriety for a minute now. And part of the thing, I think, for me, what I found is, like, the longer I'm sober, it's like, I feel like now I'm starting to really, just now, to be honest, I'm starting to really kind of get comfortable with who I am. I'm really starting to accept myself. And it's been long. That's you know, that's 8 years in at this point, and that's a long time. But that's how deeply rooted, you know, like you I don't know if we said it earlier, but you know that it's like, you know, would you say addiction is what's it? It's only 10% of the problem,
10%.
Right? Yeah, and because you're right, I agree, man. Like that, the rest is just all these false beliefs about who I am, and you know, I'm this terrible person, and to begin to reconcile that and start accepting myself. Tell me about you and that, right? Like that idea of self-acceptance and self-love.
Yeah. Actually, I'm still learning that, and I can relate to you, like, as far as the time-wise, it takes a long time. But self, you know, as far as the self part, I accepted the fact that I'm an addict. You know, and for the individual that hasn't accepted that yet, that's listening, I encourage you to. You know, but know that, being so I have accepted it, and I had 5 years clean, you know, I'm still learning to accept who I am.
Mm.
What I mean by that is that I'm learning new things about myself.
Yeah.
That I'm learning to accept now, in which when I was in my active addiction, we didn't care who we were. We didn't, you know, we've lost ourselves. So for me, it's a beautiful thing to know how strong I really am, you know, and how like, you know, just to be in tune with myself, or still, you know, growing in tune with myself. And a lot of people think that it happens overnight. Like, once you get clean, you're just going to snap back into place. No, it takes time.
Right.
If not the same amount of time that you've been using to, like, fully get in tune with yourself again. So I'm learning to accept that as I go and grow, as I continue, you know, like even doing this is a new thing for me, and it gives me energy, you know, to help people. And it's like, you know, this is a part of me that I, you know, that I got to accept because it's healthy.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's healthy. So it's a beautiful experience, man.
Yeah.
And, I'm still growing and learning and accepting who I am, but the one that's listening, you have to accept who you are. You know, the longer that I stayed in denial, that was the, you know, that's when the longer my run was.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm hoping that we're going to do more of these to dive into some more topics. You know, I wanted to let people know who you are and where you're coming from. And to let people know about, to follow you on Instagram, and it's at soldiers_4_recovery.
Yes, sir.
And
to let the followers know that, you know, I also was addicted to opiates as well.
Yeah.
Because you might have some listeners, well, he was just a drinker. No, I was a hardcore addict, you know.
Yeah.
And just to let you guys know, I can relate, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so, you know, what we always do is here at this point, you know, if you want to reach out to us, you can email us contact@themosthighshow. And if there's something that, pronounce me your name again.
Suleiman Hassan.
All right. If there's something that Suleiman Hassan has said that's resonated with you, you can find him on Instagram, soldiers_4_recovery, or email us, contact@themosthighshow.com, and we'll put you in contact with myself or with Sulam here. And so we want to make sure, what, did I say it wrong? What is it?
Suleiman.
Dang.
There you go.
There's some brain damage. There's some brain damage going on over here, man. Suleiman.
Yes, sir.
Okay. My wife's over here behind the camera just looking down, embarrassed.
That's okay.
Yeah. So.
And hold on, I got a question. You're based down Atlanta, right?
We're in Atlanta, yeah.
I'll be down in November.
All right. Well, I'm hoping we'll connect. Yeah.
Most definitely.
All right. I want to thank you guys for listening and, you know, be encouraged today. If anything from our stories, you know, lets you know that we do recover, that the recovery is possible, and that the life that we're experiencing now is, it's, you know, I would say we're fully alive right now. And that's because we are no longer a slave to those drugs and alcohol. So, and you can be that way
right.
too.
That's right. And you guys can catch me. So this full recovery, every morning, I'm out there and delivering the message of motivation, of hope. You guys, you know, I know those dark moments, man. You can go and refer to a friend or family member that may be struggling with this disease of addiction for some hope and strength for the day.
Yeah, yeah.
Soldiers for Recovery.
All right. That's it for the Most High Show today. Thanks for listening. Talk to you.